What we're gonna do right here is go back, way back, back into time.
This is Butch Slaughter, and you're listening to the Echoes of Indiana Avenue. Welcome to my neighborhood, the Avenue. I grew up here, and each week I'll be sharing the sounds and stories of the people that made the Avenue great. Welcome back to the Avenue. On this week's show, we'll be focusing on the vocalist, guitarist, and songwriter Lonnie Williams. Lonnie is one of the unsung legends of Indianapolis music. He's been performing on the Naptown scene for over 50 years, working with groups like the Sonic Sounds, the Show Merchants, the Diplomats, Jazzy Kaze, Cosmic Jones, Manchild, Shadrach, Rapture, and the Circle City Band. And Lonnie maintains a big presence on the Naptown scene today, performing with the popular R&B group, the Downstroke Band. WFYI's Kyle Long spoke to Lonnie Williams in 2019. During the interview, Lonnie was joined by two of his fellow bandmates, Rodney Stepp and Greg Russell. Let's join our conversation with Lonnie as he remembers his early years growing up on Indiana Avenue and recalls the influence of his father, Gaines Bethel Williams, a prominent guitarist on the Avenue during the 1940s.
Tell me a little bit about your background growing up in Indianapolis. Are you born and raised here?
Yeah, sure was. Born and raised on the west side of town. Lockfield Gardens.
Lockfield, okay.
Yeah.
What era did you grow up in? When were you born? When did you go to high school?
I was born in 1950.
Yeah.
I went to probably every grade school that you could think of because my parents moved around a lot. He knows that. I went to school, started out at school four as far as my, my kindergarten years and all that. I started out at school four. It's called Mary E. Cable School Four. I don't even think it's there anymore. Then I went to school 24. And from school 24, I think that's when I went to school 41. I went to these schools in a row, 41, 42, and 43. I went to all three of those grade schools. Then from school 43, I went to high school, which was Shortridge High School.
That's where
I graduated from.
Yeah.
And I guess you could say I got interested in music because of Indiana Avenue. And I think a lot of us got our inspiration from Indiana Avenue because we were kids. I don't know if he did this or not, but I remember going down on Indiana Avenue with a friend of mine named Ronnie Collins. Monk. Me and Monk knew each other. In fact, I knew Monk a little bit before I met you because he lived across the street from me in Lockfield. And me and him used to sneak down on Indiana Avenue and listen to the bands play because we couldn't get in. We'd stand outside and listen to the bands play. If it was clearance enough for us to see through the windows, we'd be sitting peeping through the windows at the bands to see who's in there. And that's what sparked my interest in music, you know. There was clubs from one end of the atmosphere to the next, if I want to say it like that, clubs all up and down. And we were like, I guess you could say we were like the, it was like the New Orleans of Indianapolis. You know how New Orleans, what is it, Basin Street? In New Orleans, it's got clubs all the way from one end of you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Basin Street's got clubs like five or six blocks.
Right.
That's the way Indiana Avenue was back then, before IU took it over. And, you could just start on one end, and go in one club. And if you didn't like what's going in there, go next door to the next club, go next door to the next. Just clubs all the way down, And that's what sparked my interest in music,
Did you have a favorite band that you would go try to check out?
Not at the time because I really didn't know who these bands were. I didn't know what bands by name then, Like I said, we were probably 12, 13 years old, maybe. At the time, we're still kids running around, and just knowing that we could tell that was live music in there by the way it sounded. And we could see guys, we look in there, we see guys playing guitars and the drummers. And we said, man, hey, this is cool, you know. But we knew we couldn't go in, so we peeped through the windows, like I said. And the first time I got to see a live band play was in the Walker Theater, you know. And it was Billy Vaughn Upsetters and Sensations. You know, that was the first time I saw a live band play.
Hey, everybody. This is Brother Bill Matthews, the Broken Swing Upsetters. We got a new thing called Train Up China. So I'm going to get you upset to play the music to Train Up China by. Right now, we're going to get our bass playing drummer to Train Up China. Our bass playing drummer. Train Up China. We're Train Up China on the East Coast here.
I got to go in the Walker and hear the live band, and that took my interest to another level. That's when I said, yeah, man, this is what I want to do. I want to play music, you know. The guitar part came in because of the fact that my father was a guitarist, you know. So I probably should have backed up on that because really
he was
my main inspiration.
Yeah, tell me about your father and anyone else in your family that played music.
Yeah, my father was my main inspiration because he played guitar, which you knew that.
What was his name?
Gaines Williams.
You know? Gaines Williams?
Yeah.
And did he play professionally or was it more of a hobby?
For local.
Yeah.
Everybody on the avenue knew him because he played with Jimmy Cole on occasion. He played with, what's that guy? He used to be a school teacher over at Addicts High School.
Larry Liggett?
No, Harry Campbell.
Harry Campbell, okay.
Yeah, Harry Campbell played the piano. Yeah.
You remember Harry Campbell?
I think he was a music teacher.
He was at 17.
Yeah,
he was a math teacher.
Anytime he got a gig outside of the school, he'd call my father, you know, and he'd be the guitarist with him, you know. And it was Harry Campbell. There was a guy that played upright bass. His name was Bob Lamar. He played upright bass. And it was a guy that played drums. I can't remember what his name was now, but they had kind of a combo. It was more of a combo, like four or five guys, you know. And they would practice at our house sometimes, and you know, and everything, and that made me want to play more. And then when my dad would leave home to go to work, I would sneak in the closet and get his guitar out and play it, because he had that Gretsch. Mm-hmm. And he always told me, he said, "Don't touch my guitar," because it was a Gretsch, you know. Back then, if you had a Gretsch or a Gibson, you had And he'd go to work, and I'd sneak in there and get his guitar out, make sure I put it back the way it came in. And bling, bling, bling. I fooled around with it until I started to learn the chord on it and learn finger the notes and everything. And that would happen maybe two or three times a week to try to keep from getting caught, you know. My mother knew I was doing it, but she never told on me. She never told on me because she saw that I was learning to play it. And every time I'd do that, she'd be looking at the clock. She'd say, "You put your daddy's guitar up." You know? I said, "Okay, Mama," you know, I put it back here and I wiped the fingerprints off, put it back in the case and put it back in the closet. And he never knew that I was sneaking his guitar out of there playing it. And that went on for a while, you know, like I said, which that was my main inspiration before I started going on the avenue, listening to music and all that. And I guess from there, it just all the bands started to come into play where I started to know who they were, like the Highlighters. And like I said, Billy Vaughn Upsetters was the first band I heard, the Highlighters. And then I never really got to hear the Moonlighters live till later on in life.
Really?
I never got to hear them live. I could hear them playing when we passed by the Blue Eagle.
Uh-huh.
I could hear the band playing, but I never get to hear them. I never got to. Because the Blue Eagle was, them guys, they were kind of strict about you standing outside, more so than the other clubs. So to see two kids standing out there listening, they would have ran us off. So we just kind of walked past here and listened to what
we
could.
They let us stand out there.
Yeah, they would run us off.
I don't know why. Maybe because Jerry's father was
probably
a fireman and they knew him. And
Charlie more of a connection,
Smith, you know, and all of them knew us.
Yeah, but I mean, that was like my childhood experience as far as sparking my interest in music.
When did you get your own guitar?
Oh, man. Okay. I got my own guitar probably when I was probably about 16. I went to Sack Brothers down on the avenue. It was a music store called Sack Brothers. You remember them?
No, I never heard of it. Yeah,
music store. They had so much stuff. Step will tell you, there was so many instruments in that place, it was ridiculous. Because they had like, was it two floors of instruments? You go upstairs.
Mm-hmm.
Upstairs, you had a lot of orchestra stuff. You remember the upright basses and the violins? I mean, full of orchestra stuff. And then downstairs, there was most of your guitars were hanging up and everything. I mean, it was a grand music store at that time. You know what I'm saying? Everybody went there and bought their stuff, and they would give you deals. You know, if they had a guitar in there for $150 and you go in there with $100, you're gonna walk out of there with a guitar.
Yes.
They do. You remember Jerry?
Yeah.
So I went in there and I seen this one guitar that I wanted, and I said, well, I ain't got but like 100, I think about 110 or 15 bucks. And he wanted like $170 for this guitar. And he said, well, he said, I can give you $170, you know. He said, that's with the case. I said, okay. I said, but I only got him like 110 bucks, you know. He says, well, he said, I'll tell you what. He said, I give it to you for $100 without the case. I said, well, okay, I want the guitar. I ain't worried about the case. He goes, okay, write him up, Jerry. Remember, yeah, he used to say that. He said, write him up, Jerry.
Yeah.
I'm getting on the bus. I ain't got no car. I'm on the bus with a guitar, with a naked guitar. It's not a case on it. And I got these people on there, like, there's a few winos and stuff on there, and they keep taunting me, you know, come on, man, play us this tune. I said, I'm just learning to play, man. I just bought the guitar. I said, I'm not good enough to sit here and play it. Oh, come on, man, we know you could play. Come on, play us a tune. They just kept messing with me the whole ride. I was glad when I got off of that bus, you know. Like, you can play that thing. One guy, he wanted to see the guitar. I let him see it, and he got to janging on it, and people turn around looking at us. We sitting in the back. He hands it back to me. He said, you're going to sit here and tell us you can't play the guitar, but you got a guitar. I said, well, yeah, but I'm just learning to play, so, I mean, I can't play you a tune where you'd be satisfied with what you're going to hear. Okay, man, I know he's messing with us, ain't he? He's talking to him. He can play. I said, I can't really play, man. So I take the guitar, go home, you know, and I walk in the house with it, and my father was there at the time, and I come in with the guitar, and he goes, where'd you get that from? I said, down the sack, brother. What you going to do with it? Because he don't know that I didn't learn to. I said, well, I want to learn how to play it. He said, let me see it. So I handed it to him. He sat there. He plugged it in and everything. He was trying to see if it was any good. He said, okay, it's a nice guitar. It's a pretty good guitar. How much you pay for it? I said, $100. He said, $100? He said, where's the case? I said, well, they told me I had to spend another $70 to get the case. He said, they going to charge you $70 for a case down there? I said, yeah. Nah, that ain't going to happen. Come on, let's go. We got in the car. Wait a minute. We get in the car. He puts me, we go in the car. I said, what you get ready to do that? He said, we going back down there. I said, oh, man. So we go back down there. He knows them real good. You know, he went in there and got a case for that guitar. He only paid $20 for the case. He said, he was trying to get you. Yeah. Yeah. He said, here, now you got a case for your guitar. He paid $20 for the case that they were going to charge me $70 for. He said, now you got a case.
Like, yeah, and all the time you thinking you get a deal.
Yeah, all the time I thought I was getting a deal. He said the guitar was decent. He said, it's okay. You got a decent deal. They should have gave you a case with it. I said, well, they didn't.
You know? Do you remember what kind of guitar it was?
Yamaha.
Yamaha.
It was a Yamaha guitar, the first guitar.
Yeah.
If you're just tuning in, our guest this week is the Indianapolis soul singer and guitarist Lonnie Williams. Lonnie has performed with many important Naptown groups during his career, including the Diplomats, a group of teenage musicians that became a local sensation during the late 1960s. Let's listen to the group's 1969 single, Humbug, a funky instrumental released on the Lamp Records label.
What is the humbug?
That was the Diplomats with their 1969 single, Humbug, released on Herb Miller's Lamp Records label. Due to contractual issues with Lamp, the Diplomats released their follow-up single under the name Jazzy Kazzy and the Eight Sounds. That record was issued in 1970 on John Terrell's Naptown Records label. Our guest this week, Lonnie Williams, sang and co-wrote both sides of Jazzy Kazzy's debut release. In this next clip, Lonnie is joined by Jazzy Kazzy keyboardist and bandleader Rodney Stepp. Let's return to our conversation as Rodney and Lonnie recall their years performing together with the Diplomats and Jazzy Kazzy.
When did you officially join the Diplomats?
Ask him.
Rodney, do you
I told
remember?
You he keeps up with bass better than me.
Yeah, I was just sitting here pondering and thinking about the time because it was 69. It was definitely 69. It might not have been latter either. It might have been about the summer of 69 because right after that, less than 6 months later, we recorded Young Girl and Soul City. And because I was still in high school when that record was out. Because I remember the first day that Spider Harrison played it on TLC.
And you know what? You know what was funny about this situation, though? Because I had somebody ask me one day, they said, who is Jazzy Cazzy in the Eight Sounds? And in reality, Jazzy Cazzy in the Eight Sounds was really the Diplomats. Wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was the Diplomats.
We had to change our name for some legal reasons.
It was really the Diplomats, you know? But I never told nobody that.
Yeah.
Because I wanted people to still be trying to figure it out, you know? Because they thought it was a whole different band. Everybody that I knew, and they when they heard the record, they said, Lonnie, who is Jazzy Cazzy in the Eight Sounds? I was like, well, it's a band, you know? I said, listen to the record, you know? I never told nobody that was really the Diplomats, you know?
Were you about 18 or 19 when you joined the Diplomats? Would that be about right?
Within that age range, yeah. I still hadn't reached my 20s yet.
Because he's a little bit older than I was.
Yeah.
A couple of years.
Was the Jazzy Cazzy name strictly for the record? Were you continuing to perform live as the Diplomats, or did you totally switch the name over?
No, we totally switched the name.
Yeah.
And we started performing as Jazzy Cazzy and Eight Sounds and hated it, but
hated it, man.
But because the Diplomats was a household name.
It was a household name.
Couldn't record as the Diplomats because of the group in Washington D.C. So they had to put the ICS on it. Mm. So then we recorded as the Diplomatics, and then when we got Herb Miller wouldn't let us record under the Diplomatics name, even though we wasn't signed to LAMP, but it became another legal issue.
Continuing with that recording entity. Okay, gotcha. Yeah.
And because we were going to Naptown label then next, okay? Because Herb hadn't offered us any opportunities to record again, and that had been 2 years. So, you know, he was having success with the Vanguards and everybody else. So we got with John Terrell, and John said, hey, you know, I'd like to record a record on you. But when we got ready to, then we get this injunction, you can't use the name Diplomatics. What? Okay. So we just went crazy. And I liked basketball, and I liked the University of Michigan at the time, which is Jazzy Cazzy, Cazzy Russell.
You came up with that name, didn't you?
Uh-huh. It was really a combination of things because y'all knew I liked basketball too. And everybody kept trying to put me up front name wise in the group. And I really never wanted that.
Jazzy Cazzy was a ghostwriter.
Yeah, it was supposed to be a ghost.
It really was, wasn't it?
Uh huh.
Nobody had that name.
Nobody really was supposed to have a name. But I ended up JC, okay? Mm-hmm. And it was Forrest Live. And so I ended up, people start calling me JC, you know.
Just maybe 6 months after Lonnie came into the band, you guys recorded Young Girl, which you co-wrote, right, Lonnie?
Yeah.
So you guys immediately, it sounds like, started connecting as writers and started working on material.
That's when we first realized.
Yeah, tell me about that whole process.
Well, that's when me and him first realized that we could develop ourselves into being a writing team because we did something that we put together a song that, you know, this was our first experience. And we put together a song that actually made some noise, you know, and the DJs liked it. You know, we got a lot of airplay from it. You mentioned earlier Spider Harris. He loved us, man. he loved us. And in fact, didn't he shoot that record down south? Wasn't he the one that actually shot that record down south? Because that's where he was from, wasn't he?
Yep.
He shot that record down south in Chicago. I was shocked, man, when I seen, like, Chicago was listening to our song.
Let's listen to both sides of Jazzy Cazzy's 1970 single for Naptown Records. This is Jazzy Cazzy and the Eight Sounds with Young Girl and Soul City. touch that dial. Echoes of Indiana Avenue will return with more words and music from Lonnie Williams after this short break.
This is Butch Slaughter, and you're listening to the Echoes of Indiana Avenue.
Our guest this week is the vocalist, guitarist, and songwriter Lonnie Williams. He's been performing on the Naptown scene for over 50 years, working with groups like the Diplomats, Jazzy Cazzy, Rapture, and the Circle City Band. And today, Lonnie performs as a member of the popular R&B group The Downstroke Band. Lonnie is one of the unsung legends of Indianapolis music, and his music has made an impact on many Naptown performers, including Kenny Babyface Edmonds. In 2019, WFYI's Kyle Long spoke with Babyface, and he recalled watching Lonnie perform during the 1970s.
I remember always liking Lonnie. I don't know exactly what it was, but something was likable about Lonnie. I don't even remember what his style was, but something was cool about him.
Yeah.
I just know there was something about him that I remembered, that he stuck out to me.
During the 1970s, Lonnie performed with several local groups, including Cosmic Jones, Shadrack, and an early version of Manchild. But Lonnie's most significant project during the 1970s was Rapture, an all-star Indianapolis funk band led by Lonnie's former bandmate and songwriting partner, Rodney Stitt. In this next clip, Lonnie is joined by Rapture's band leader, Rodney Stitt, and guitarist, Greg Russell. Let's return to our conversation with Lonnie Williams as WFYI's Kyle Long asked Lonnie about his work with Manchild.
You were in the first version of Manchild, right, with Reggie Griffin? Is that true?
What
did you do after Jazzy Cazzy?
Kind of borderline with Manchild because at that time, I think me and this guy here at that time, because you were in Manchild for a short period of time, weren't you?
Yeah, but that was after you.
Was that? That was after Shadrack. That was after Shadrack.
You was there. That's where I first knew you.
Yeah. It was after Shadrack. And what was the name of
it? It wasn't even Manchild then.
Black Funk Experience?
I don't remember what it was. Yeah. But I was in there for a minute, but it was a quick minute because I was doing some other things and, you know, and I don't know what it was. I don't remember that.
You were with Cosmic Jones, Manchild, and then after that, Shadrack?
No, Shadrack. I think Shadrack. Manchild first.
Yeah.
Then was it
Cosmic Jones
and then Shadrack.
Yeah.
That's what I was trying to think of, what order it came in. Then Shadrack, yeah. And like I said, that was kind of a short-lived situation, too. Because Manchild was still trying to piece things together at the time when I was with them. They were still trying to recruit guys in and find out who they wanted and who they didn't want. And you know,
they did a Funk Incorporated thing,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, they did a Funk Incorporated thing. Yeah,
they did Funk with Bobby Wiley.
Yeah, Bobby Wiley. That's why I say it was kind of a whole lot going on at the time where everybody was trying to find out where they fit in and what to do. And, you know, it was a whole lot going on at that time. So it was kind of hard to say.
And describe to me what kind of music you guys were playing with Shadrack in the early days of the group.
It was funk.
Originals, yeah. Covers?
We did all most covers.
Covers, yeah.
Yeah, we did all covers.
Originals, yeah.
Yeah. And what kind of clubs were you playing in generally?
They were R&B clubs.
Most of the clubs that played R&B.
Did you have like a regular gig though anywhere?
We bounced around. Back then it was enough clubs around that would hire us till we would we'd go in a circle. You know, we'd hit this club one weekend and you know all these club owners that hired bands knew each other, so they would kind of keep an eye on where different groups were. They would hire at that time bands like us and I guess it was Manchild
was
going in.
Yeah.
They had Expressions. Yeah. You had so many bands. I was telling him earlier, I didn't realize there was this many musicians in Indianapolis until I seen all these bands coming out. I was like, where are all these bands coming from? Expressions, and you know, it was a bunch of bands, man. And they would take us and they would, from one club to the next. So every band realized the clubs that were hiring, that they could play at, that were popular, that people would fill up. Because people wanted to hear live music. We go from the Zodiac to the Mark IV to the, Gordy's.
To everywhere.
Night Flight, you know, all the up and down 38th Street. You just all these clubs would hire us. There was a club called Dave's Lounge, was way out. I think it was Pelham Pike or something. Remember Dave's?
Well, we were the house band at the Function Junction.
Then there was the Demonstrators Club on Central, you know, which did we ever play in there?
I played in there with another band,
but I don't think we ever played in there.
That was before Shad, right?
I was in there with a band called Live and Living Color for a while. So, and that was the house band, you know. So,
yeah. I know you're bad with dates, but maybe Greg can help.
What? I said I'm the oldest man, so these guys they can remember something. Okay, Greg. When they say something and it pops in my mind. I say, okay, that did happen.
Greg, what year would you say Shadrach started?
76.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah,
76.
That's what I don't remember. Yeah. Dates.
How did Rodney Stepp get in the mix? I mean, he's told me his version, but how did he get in the mix with you guys?
Well, from what I remember him coming there when we were playing. Mm-hmm. He'd come off the rope with the spinners. He would always come in. He had that sparkle jacket. Remember that jacket you had with the rhinestones and stuff in it? You know, and
trying to intimidate people.
Yeah, I didn't really know him then, but, you know, I knew of him. But, you know, when guys like that walk in the room, you know, you had no way game on. You know,
you don't know whether they're promoters or.
Yeah, you know, but I knew who he was, you know what I mean? So. That you know, that's kind of where that kind of started, and like I said, that's where we end up meeting with him. Mm-hmm. So, Shadrach, we went on for quite a while because we were the house band there, and I think what happened, they got robbed or something like that, and the club owner decided to close the club. So when they closed the club, them two guys there, Lonnie and Rodney got together, and that's when, well, it was still Shadrach for
still
a minute,
Shadrach,
wasn't it?
Yeah.
I didn't come along then. Mm-hmm. They had got together and started forming the band Rapture, which was Shadrach Seal, and I had went with another little group that was playing at the Zodiac. I was still playing down there, so they had somebody else. So I guess this other guy didn't work out. So Rodney or Lonnie, one of you guys called me, and. That's how I ended up with the group, you know. We were still Shadrach before we even changed the name to Rapture, you know. And it was crazy because when I got with that, it was a whole different ball game then, you know. It was like from there to there.
Big band.
I went down to rehearsal, horn player was blowing, you know. I'm like, what is going on here? Herman and Jay them, they fired up the horn. I mean, you had Harry back there killing. I'm like, man, what is going on here? I'm like, man, can I do this or what? You know, but being with them guys, they took me to a whole nother level, you know. I mean, they could have said, you ain't good enough to be here, you know what I mean? But they didn't treat me that way. I learned. You know, I listened, I learned. So my whole musical thing went from here to here because of these guys, you know. And I would tell all young people, I said, if you ever want to get somewhere, you got to play with people that's better than you because that's the only way you're going to be any good.
And we were still in the process. So we learned from each other.
Yeah, we still learned.
You know, just being around all these musicians and everybody had ideals going, we learned from each other. Everybody kind of picked up, you know, some experience from each other, man. You know, I had to say that because that's really how it is, you know.
In the late 1970s, Rapture became one of the most popular bands on the Naptown scene, packing local clubs like the Mark IV.
Nobody had the crowds that we had. Y'all remember the Mark IV? Y'all remember them Thursday nights when people were wrapped around the building?
Oh, yeah.
Coming at the club at 6 and 7 o'clock for a show that didn't start till 10?
Yeah.
Do you remember how the club owner was? It really messed him up when we left?
Oh, yeah, and called us back from New York.
He flew us back. When we came back in there, he let us run the club, remember?
Yep.
He let us run the club. He let us have the door. He was so glad to get us back in there. If we hadn't came back, he talked like the club was going to sink because we actually kept that club every weekend. We kept that club on its toes, man. We kept it back. Oh, we played 6 days a week in there, didn't we? Sometimes.
We played
every night.
Monday
through Saturday. So we kept it
packed every night.
That man made a good, you know, killing off us, man. He made a lot of money off us. So we were kind of his bread and butter, you know what I'm saying?
Rapture recorded over 2 albums of original material. But unfortunately, those sessions were never released. But in 2018, the British label Super Disco Edits issued a limited edition single featuring 2 Rapture songs. We'll listen to that record now. First, we'll hear Let Me Put It In Your Ear, co-written by Lonnie Williams. And after that, we'll hear In My Life.
I've got something I want you to hear. Funky music, let me put it in your ear. It's so funky, you may not believe what this thing that I got on my sleeve. And if you don't believe a word I say, let me put it in your ear. Let me put it in your ear.
In my life,
this is Butch Slaughter, and you're listening to the Echoes of Indiana Avenue.
Our guest this week is the vocalist, guitarist, and songwriter Lonnie Williams. He's been performing on the Naptown scene for over 50 years, and we just heard two songs Lonnie recorded with Rapture. After leaving Rapture, Lonnie co-wrote and recorded a classic Indianapolis funk song with Paul Thomas of the Circle City Band. Let's return to our conversation with Lonnie Williams as he recalls his work with the Circle City Band.
It seems like you've done the majority of your work as a songwriter with Rodney. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, that's the only time I've ever written.
It is the only
with
time.
That
yeah.
and with the Circle City Band.
Okay.
With Paul
okay.
Thomas.
Did you write some stuff with Paul Thomas?
Yeah.
Yeah, which songs?
Magic.
Oh, you did.
Co-wrote.
Oh, that's
actually,
right. He's told me that yeah. before. I didn't make the
I wrote all the words to Magic.
Really?
Really. Paul Thomas came up with the hook. That magic from the sparkle. He came up with that. But all the verses I wrote around it, you know, because he had all of that down before I even did the verses. And he came to me and said,
you're the voice.
Yeah. He came to me and said, Lonnie, can you, because Paul Thomas wasn't a lead singer. He came to me. He said, man, I'm nerdy. He said, I got the hook already out, already down in the music. He said, all I need you to do is come in and come up with some words in between the hooks. And that's what I did. I wrote all the words, you know, when it came to the lead vocal parts. And that's where that happened,
wow.
at, you know.
Wow.
You know, and I did the little guitar parts, you know, because
yeah.
he didn't have a guitar parts in there. But Paul did all the, he laid all the other stuff, you know, itself. I think the drums were Drum Machine,
mm-hmm.
I think. And he laid all the other tracks itself, you know. He pieced it together, puzzled it together. And I came in and did the little guitar parts that you heard in the lead vocals, that was it.
Yeah. So yeah. you've only written a handful of songs, but they're all songs that have a lot of longevity
yeah,
and had
yeah.
a big impact.
They got noticed, you know.
Yeah.
From 1983, this is the Circle City Band with Magic. This is Butch Slaughter, and you're listening to the Echoes of Indiana Avenue. That was the Circle City Band with Magic, co-written and sung by our guest this week, Lonnie Williams. He's been performing on the Naptown scene for over 50 years, and he remains active on the scene today as a member of the Downstroke Band. Lonnie's longtime friend and bandmate, Greg Russell, is also a member of Downstroke. Let's return to our conversation with Lonnie as he and Greg discuss their work with the Downstroke Band.
Who actually called us back into this situation?
Well, actually, I came back off the road because, like I said, I got off the road in 96, and I was fresh off the road, actually, mm-hmm. and I think it was Gooch that called.
I think it had to be Gooch.
Gooch called because y'all had started forming Yeah. You know,
before we were putting people together.
Yeah.
So, Anthony Johnson from Manchild.
Yeah, Manchild.
Bobby Parsons,
the
drummer from Manchild.
Yeah.
Martha was, a lady named Martha was playing keyboards. And we were just kind of trying to put another band together before we even came up with a name, I think.
So that's how me and him came back together.
It was Gucci that actually started calling people. You know?
Yeah, that's how me and Lonnie came back together. Yeah.
So basically that's where they came from.
And Downstroke's like a super group of Indianapolis.
Yeah, we kept building and building and building and replacing people here and there
until we found the right nucleus. And like I said, we had been together what 20 years pretty much just around here in town.
By that time, I had kind of had a talk with myself, and then my family was all over me. You know, man, what you doing? You need to get back out there and play some music. Because they knew I was what I was going through. You know, they could see they could tell I was missing the music, because when I wasn't playing music, I was fidgety. You know what I'm saying? I couldn't find nothing to do. You know what I'm saying? But go to work, come home, sit down, listen to music, put the headphones on, go down to the basement. I was fidgety, man. I was all over the place. And my family kept saying, man, you need to get your butt. My sister was really on me. He could tell you that step. Frances was one of them people where we used to practice that. She's one of them people that would, she would really get, you know, she'd keep messing with you until she was like a bug. You know, she'd keep messing with you. I could be sitting on the couch or something with the headphones on, and she'd come take the headphones off of me and say, when you gonna start playing music again? She was like that. She was a bug, you know. She was one of them people that always, you know, she always enforced things when it came to me and my music. You know, she was always in my corner when it came to the music, you know. And then once she met Step and we started rehearsing at the house and everything, you know, that made things, you know, go a little further, you know, and that made me get more interested in wanting to play music again. But with the Downstroke deal, you know, after, like I said, after my family kept getting in my ear and then my girlfriend kept getting in my ear, why don't you do something before you go crazy? That's when I said to myself, I said, I got to sit down and have a talk with myself and decide, do I want to do this again? Do I want to be in another band? And when I started seeing who the guys were that were trying to put it together, when I seen, okay, we got some guys from Manchild, you know, and you came along later, didn't you?
I came along later.
And I said, let me see what's going to happen. When I heard Bobby Parsons was going to be there and AJ, which was guys I respected from them being in Manchild, and then when Gooch called, I said, okay, I'll give it a try. But I had to make up my mind that I was going to do this and not get frustrated again because of one person, you know what I'm saying? And that's what pulled me back in, and I tried to keep myself on a level where I was going to keep moving regardless, you know, of what happened with other people, you know, and just ignore whatever other situations were going on and just focus on, you know, staying with the music. And that's, you know, to this day, I guess that's what keeps me going now, you know.
That's all the time we have this week. Thank you for tuning in. And thank you to our guest this week, Lonnie Williams. You can meet me here on the Avenue again next week, same time, same place. And you can find the Echoes of Indiana Avenue podcast on Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you download your podcasts. Echoes of Indiana Avenue is written and produced by Kyle Long and hosted and co-produced by me, Herman Butch Slaughter.
Nobody knows on uptown, baby, like I do. Nobody knows on uptown, baby, like I do. If you will stop and listen, I will tell you a thing or two. When you get lonesome and want